This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, a segment that's gained a little popularity here the first couple of weeks. We take you behind enemy lines where you hear from coaches of the opposing schools.
The they part.
They.
Not the we. The
no,
they.
They. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hear from opposing coaches facing off against the ACC this week. Last week we had Josh Heupel of Tennessee, among others, on the
air. Josh was on there.
He was.
That's still funny. Disappointed.
Yeah.
I had some guy send me a tweet yesterday whining about the refs in that game. I'm like, hey, dude, you're up 10 points. You're at home. You got a quarterback that missed, according to Tom Luganville, at least two or three wide open.
What's that sign say over
there? Why are you whining about
this? Can I ask you a question? What's that sign say right there?
What sign?
The one that's lit up. What does that sign say? Right there. The one right.
ACC Network?
Yeah. Yeah.
He sent me, but he's got a picture of the ACC referee.
I know.
What are you whining about?
And again,
dude, go close the deal.
What? Do you think he was from the Tennessee side of things?
You know he was.
I know he was.
He's a Tennessee dude.
That's what I saw the tweet. And
you
I was kind of
like
going, yeah.
I'm like, dude, what are you talking about?
What's that sign say again?
Right. So like, excuse me, wrong network. I mean, if you want a Tennessee suck up, believe me, I know where you can find one in the afternoons on another network. Believe me, I know where you can find
one. Okay, let's get to the key defensive stats through 2 weeks. You ready? Over the last 15 seasons, only three teams have not allowed a touchdown on defense in their first three games. You ready?
I got this one.
Iowa Hawkeyes with Adrian Claiborne, 2007-2008.
That Iowa defense this year ain't bad either.
No, sir. Probably. And the Florida State Seminoles in 2012.
That's it.
Okay? Saturday, Clemson will be trying to do that. Join that list. That's all there is right there.
First three games. It's not during the season did you have three in a row. Because Louisville, I think, pulled that off in 2014, I'm not mistaken.
Right.
But the first three games. And listen, I think one of our questions this week was, will Georgia Tech score a touchdown in the first three quarters? I mean, eventually somebody's going to score on you. I hate to break the news to anybody.
Right. But.
But that crowd is awfully good, though.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Clemson is also attempting to hold three consecutive offenses out of the end zone for the first time since 1990.
By the way, when you were rattling off the 81 team the other day and the 18 team, that 90 team, which I think was Danny's last year, youngster people, that team was scary good. I think they beat John Makovic in Illinois in the bowl game something to nothing. I mean, that was a talented group. I might be wrong about that year, but they were good, man.
We'll go back and look at it.
Yeah, I got to look that one up.
We'll double check you there. Appalachian State, Duke, and Georgia in the 1990 season is who Clemson held out of the end zone.
Georgia didn't score, huh?
It says according to the document the document I've been given here, Appalachian State, Duke, and Georgia.
Man.
So 1990.
That's a good group.
Virginia enters the weekend. The only FBS team in the country not to allow a red zone score.
By the way, in my ear while you were rattling off tonight, Clemson beat Illinois in a bowl game 30-0 that year. Take full credit for that off the top of my head.
That's great.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Did I tell you about Virginia?
Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium.
The only FBS team in the country not to allow a red zone score in the first 3 weeks of college football. That's 0-1-2, obviously.
The North Carolina offensive line against this group right here, I'm telling you, when you watch this game Saturday night, given what's been barked about, what isn't happening with North Carolina running the football, I think it's the key to the football game Saturday night.
I really do. Don't disagree. So there you go.
By the way, you like the Virginia end zones? Because I do.
Oh, yeah, the old diamond look?
I do.
Absolutely.
Like it.
Old school. Don Lawrence.
That could be a topic. Bestwick. That could be a topic for another show, but I've always liked the Virginia end zones.
George Blackburn. That's the old school. Scott Stadium right there, boys.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm all about the way Virginia's going about their business on that.
The logos and everything. Yeah, I'm with you.
I like it.
Yep.
ACC has four of the 16 teams nationally, Mark, that have yet to allow a rushing score. Would you care to name them?
I can because I said
you got
I
the same
look
document.
Right here and
you
see
got
the same one
document.
You got.
Yeah, and it's on the screen. Clemson, NC State, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest have not allowed a rushing score.
All right, here's a question for you, big man. Uh-huh. Of those four, State, Clemson, Wake, Virginia Tech, how many do give one up this week?
Two.
See, now that would have been a good true-false question for the voice of a single victory, Josh Macker. State, Clemson, Wake, yeah. Virginia Tech.
I'm going to go two.
Pitching a shutout.
Two.
So you think half of them give something up?
That's right, yeah. All right, we move on.
Okay.
After
didn't mean to slow you up.
No, you're good. After two games, NC State leads the ACC. They rank nationally 16th, allowing just 63 rushing yards per game. Now, don't forget against Mississippi State the other night, the kickoff return set the table, and then bad things happened in the throw game for the Wolfpack. Oh, man.
Hate that 11 is gone, man. It saddens me to see that.
Golly. Wolfpack is – look, Mighty Paladins are there on Saturday night at Carter-Finley for Parents Weekend, we're being told.
Christian Knights have no shot.
No,
Saturday night.
Zero.
Dick Sheridan is not walking
Jimmy
through
Satterfield.
That door. They're not walking
Frankie DeBusk is not coming through that door.
NC State.
Jerome Felton.
Nope, you're exactly right.
That's it.
NC State bounces back after the disappointing effort and game at Mississippi State. And they better not be looking ahead either.
Bobby Johnson, we need to get Bobby on the phone. Tell Bobby, you're not going through that door.
Hey, they've had some good coaches there, man. You go through the history, and as we pointed out earlier this week, Fernman, they've had some great coaches on that beautiful campus in Greenville, South Carolina.
Boston College and Georgia Tech are tied for first in the nation in total missed tackles with just four. BC is second in tackle percentage. Georgia Tech is third.
I bet
this is an impossible stat for me to qualify.
I bet that number changes this week.
Oh, you know it does.
I love this play.
Jordan Dominic now. So.
Boink.
Oh, that is a mash. Is that Charlie Thomas too?
Yeah.
Charlie Thomas ended up having a whale of a day, including WRU.
And he got hardware.
Boston College and Virginia Tech are T5 nationally in interceptions with four. Or five, depending on the screen. They lead the ACC, by the way.
Which one is it, four or five? I think it's four. My guess would be four.
Okay.
Could be wrong.
Yeah.
They got, the Hokies got what, three off of Howell?
Yeah, they did.
Got to look up those stats from last week.
Yeah. By the way, quick note here. Carolina fans a little upset with Tom Luganville yesterday.
Why is that?
Didn't have him in the top five.
Well, I mean, beg a question, I must add.
Just for clarity, those of you that saw it on social media and didn't see the show, here we go with that. Lugs was talking about the interceptions and the inconsistency of opening night impacting his top five. Not that Sam Howell's not deserving. Through 2 weeks, he didn't think Sam Howell was one of the top five quarterbacks.
I thought he was.
Yeah, I did too. But we also had the Phil Jurkovec discussion yesterday in the top five.
Again, based on only 2 weeks, not projected.
That's right.
Thank through you. What you've seen.
That's it. Pitt ranks fifth nationally, first in the ACC, averaging five sacks per game. They've had 10 total. Look, I know Rashad Weaver and Patrick Jones are gone. I'm just telling you, this is a better front than people think. Cansey wrecks the house. I mean, David Green comes off the bench. He gives you something. Baldonado makes this play here the other day. They've got guys, John Morgan, John Patrician, Servassier Dennis. They've got players. That's the thing. People saw Weaver. They saw Jones. They saw Jalen Twyman go. They can't be as good. They are. This is the team.
And they're better offensively than they were a year ago.
Yes, absolutely. Pitt also has three fumble recoveries, tops among the ACC. They are 10th nationally in that category. So
this is what happens when you play SEC teams early. You load up on stats.
By the way, look at that play. Haba, who is a great story, by the way. Grew up in Rome, came to Florida to play football. Used to be an MMA fighter. His brother still fights. Dude is crazy athletic, by the way. Baldonado.
You know,
at his size.
Pitt just needs to stay healthy, right?
No question.
But I will just caution you. A year ago, I was high on the Pitt bandwagon, as you well know. Mm-hmm. Paris Ford, all those
guys. That's right.
And you did the game that I think kind of changed their direction.
NC State?
NC State at home.
No question.
And you were thinking, man, if they get by this game at home, they're favored, everything's good.
Yep.
And they just didn't close. Maybe they learned from a year ago. And not to get too crazy high. Now, they'll win again this week against Western Michigan.
Right.
Not worried about a hangover for beating Tennessee or anything like that. But keep an eye on Pittsburgh now. I'm just saying. They've got the quarterback. They can score. And they're being disruptive again, which you expect with a Pat Narduzzi defense.
Tim Lester brings Western Michigan into Heinz Field this weekend. It's a 12 noon start. I'll say this now. They will sling it around a little bit. Lester is the former offensive coordinator at Syracuse, who's now at his alma mater. He's done a nice job kind of keeping that P.J. Fleck momentum going with their program in the MAC. Florida State leads the ACC and is 19th nationally in yards per rush. Opponent yards per rush at 2.34. Doing a good job. They shut down Notre Dame on opening night.
Excellent.
And did an excellent job against Jacksonville State. Now, there are other parts that – pause for concern. Like, but this part right here,
yeah,
they've got it sorted out in yards per rush.
And that'll be important this week, taking on the Deeks with that funky rushing attack, right? You have to be disciplined. That's one word you hear about the Noles a lot and when we start talking about penalties and all that kind of stuff. But again, there's a lot of things about the Noles that I do like. It's just the problem is they're 0-2.
Yep.
And that brain freeze from Saturday night, you can't let that lurk into this week. Yeah. Cannot.
So keep that going. Florida State, Wake Forest. More tomorrow on that one. Huge, right?
Narrative changing.
That's it. That's it. Final one here. Voice of Victory. Sliding one in for the old home
He's
team.
He's got two, man. It's his boys.
Cuse leads the ACC, tied for third in the nation in opponent's longest rush. 13 yards. Now, these stats here are just like digging in.
Well, first of all, I never knew that was a stat.
Oh, there are stats for everything.
Apparently so. You guys pointed that out about the first 6 months we started doing the show about the luck factor, which I thought you were making it up.
No, luck factor.
Yeah.
We got that. Brian Ives is in charge of luck.
Apparently so.
Yeah,
I thought you were making the whole thing up.
Yeah. Wonder if he's passed that off to his daughter.
Luck factor.
Florida State, by the way, tied for fifth in opponent's longest rush. Now, this is measuring a single running play. What's the longest single running play your team's allowed? 13 yards and you're tied for third in the nation? Tells you just about where you are in college football right now.
1-1 for the Orange and a heavy favorite against Albany.
That's it. Great Danes.
The Great
First
Danes.
First meeting ever with the Great Danes coming up on Saturday at noon.
Enjoy your check. You're just going to take an L.
When we come back,
can't
you
spell
enjoy
Albany with an L.
You enjoy behind enemy lines.
I do like this.
On Packer and Durham. Yeah. That's it. We're going to have that for you when we come back. We're going to go around the footprint and check in on the teams that are playing your team this week. Oh, Coach Fitz.
One of my favorites.
Ready to come to the shoe, the horseshoe. There's Gus Bus. He's ready for Louisville on Friday night. Neil Brown. Yes, sir. Morgantown America welcoming the Hokies. He's got some markers on the desk. We'll be back behind enemy lines with Packer and Durham next on ACCN.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Hey, don't forget tonight, nothing but net, the men's schedule special. Pack, 7 o'clock.
Right after the radio show.
That's it.
I'll run up the steps. Turn it on.
Yep. Luke Hancock will be there. Dallin Cuff. Kelsey Riggs, they'll outline the men's basketball schedule in the Atlantic Coast Conference. We greet you at 7 o'clock tonight with all the information right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. One app, one tap.
Yep. By the way, for the record, because we want to get it right, at least I want to get it right, Danny did not beat Illinois
30-0. No, Clemson won the game.
Clemson
won
30-0.
Danny didn't coach it.
Against McAvick, but it was Ken Hatfield's year.
Yeah.
First year. Danny beat West Virginia people. That was it. He beat Major Harris in the Gator Bowl the year before. That was it. Then Ken Hatfield took over, 1990. That defense was good. They were good.
So is this year's.
Yep.
31 years later.
Yep.
Mateo Durant, we're going to go behind enemy lines now.
I like this.
Yeah. Mateo Durant has been a one-man wrecking crew for Duke in the first two ball games. Well, the old Northwestern linebacker, now their head coach, turns on the tape, and he knows his group has got their work cut out for him on Saturday at Wallace Wade.
He's a complete back. He runs behind his pads. He's got great patience. He's got home run speed. And you can see how they trust him. I mean, they got a critical play at the end of the first half against A&T. And, you know, coach and his staff, you know, put their trust in giving the ball to Mateo. They've got an experienced offensive line and playing physical up there. Same thing with their tight ends. So they got a really tough package to prepare for. They're very sound with what they do offensively, put a lot of pressure on you with their talent. And then their ability to make plays down the field while they grind you up in the bun game with complimentary play action pass.
All right, now.
So we got our hands full, there's no doubt.
Okay, there's Pat Fitzgerald. They, after giving up the home run ball to Kenneth Walker on the first snap in week one, allowed the Fighting Larry Birds of Indiana State to only 31 yards of rushing last week in the home win in Evanston.
I will say this. It's the JPI, as you know. Pat Fitzgerald's one of my favorite people in college football. He is a great football coach.
Yep.
Totally gets it. Is kind of reminds me of Dave Clawson in the sense that he understands what the school is.
Yep.
And works. Hey, here's what we represent. Here's what we do. David Cutcliffe's done the same thing at Duke. Clawson at Wake Forest. Great academic institution. Playing a really good league. And they do it the right way.
Right.
He is a first-class dude, and that will be, again, you got the game coming up Saturday at Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium. But Pat Fitzgerald is first-class. That will be a fun game to watch, just given the fact that Duke got to feel a little bit better about itself after a week. And same thing with Northwestern. I mean, both those teams kind of got spanked that first week, not thinking they were going to, kind of find themselves actually in the same boat heading into the weekend.
I think it is we talk about narratives this week. For these two schools right here, this is a narrative game. Duke,
yeah.
It doesn't flash at you. You're unsure of your expectations of both. Both are trying to regain. Remember, Northwestern played, they were right in the thick of the Big Ten last year, right? In the limited schedule. Now can you find, where's Duke in all this? How's their offensive line? How's Gunnar Holmberg fitting in? How's their throw game expanding? Defensively, where are they? They've had a little bit of chaos in these first two games. Let's see what happens on Saturday at 4 o'clock. Off to Orlando. Tomorrow night, Gus Malzahn brings that bus to Louisville.
Yep.
Cardinal Stadium on ESPN.
Good team.
7:30. What does Coach Malzahn think? He knows slowing down Louisville will also be the same assignment like Pat Fitzgerald. You better start by containing the run.
It's going to be a challenge. They run a lot of stretch, a lot of outside zone. You know, we've not seen a lot of that, and so that'll be a challenge. They're very good at running the football on the edge with that, and their nakeds and everything that goes with that. But our run defense has been really good so far, and the run fits have been good up front. We've really won one-on-one battles, some two-on-one battles. So we'll definitely need to do that this week against the run game.
Orlando, Florida looks good on Coach Malzahn, doesn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what else looks good. When Auburn gives you $20 million not to be there. That's what really looks good. I'm looking for that gig. I'm waiting for somebody to come walking up to us and going, hey, you two old dudes, we're going to give you $20 million Auburn. Never to appear on this show again. I'm in. Where do I sign for that?
Auburn.
Good for Gus Malzahn. Well, I want to say all the time, the goal of every American worker is to be suspended with pay. And so Gus Malzahn got paid $20 or $19 million, whatever the number is. I mean, you
I think
keep
it was 21 back.
Whatever, $21 million. Great. Not to be on the sideline. I mean, that's just, why wouldn't you be happy in Orlando or anywhere else for that matter?
I mean, it's 21.
Just let that marinate a second.
$21 million.
Wes, you know, we'd really like you to do the Duke game, but we're going to give you $20 million not to appear on the broadcast. I'm in. Hey, tell you what, take the house. You can have the house. $20 million. I'll catch you later. It's your house. It's yours. Have it. What a deal. No wonder why he looks good. Who wouldn't look good? $20 million to go somewhere else. What a deal.
Let's go to Morgantown, kids. Virginia Tech and West Virginia play for the
Black Diamond Trophy.
Very good. Very good. Neil Brown is the head coach of the Mountaineers. He's done a great job, by
good
the
coach.
Way. It's his first time facing Virginia Tech, but he knows the Hokie defense presents plenty of challenges.
They played really, really high-end defense 2 weeks in a row. And North Carolina is one of the better offenses in the country, and they ran the ball extremely well versus them 2 years ago, North Carolina did. And North Carolina has ran the ball well over the last 2 years, and they got after them pretty good up front. Virginia Tech did. So I don't necessarily think they're going to watch our film and say, we got to do something different. Now, they have it in the package, the same front that Maryland played, and I anticipate seeing that.
All right. That's part one of Coach Brown's comments.
He's right with what he just said. And I'll tell you another thing. West Virginia taking a page from Virginia Tech with the cafeteria table, a notepad. They threw a little Gatorade cup in there, which is a little
sponsorship.
Spruce it up a little bit.
Ish.
But Neil Brown is a terrific young football coach. West Virginia was a really good hire.
We have more from Neil Brown, by the way, at the lunch table. Coach Brown talking about how important Braxton Burmeister is to what the Hokies do on Saturday at noon.
His ability with his feet makes them really hard to defend, especially when they play in 12 personnel, because you got extra gaps to defend. So with his ability, they do a good job mixing up who he's reading to. And so it's going to be a challenge for us on defense.
Neil Brown taking a page from my partner, Wes Durham, with the three colored pens on the table. Not exactly sure what that does for his press conference, but...
Well, you might need to highlight something.
Well, yeah, apparently so. But this is a big-time game, a chance for Virginia Tech, 15th ranked in the country in the AP poll, to really kind of validate that ranking and say, guess what? Hey, everybody's pretty good at home.
Right?
They punched North Carolina in the nose, got a great start, took care of business with no hangover with Middle Tennessee State. If you can take it on the road and keep the Black Diamond Trophy in front of that crowd, Virginia Tech could be off to the races. Just saying. This is a really important game for the Hokies.
It's been 6,193 days since the Black Diamond Trophy was in Morgantown.
And since Virginia Tech joined the ACC in the year 2004, they've played West Virginia three times, and they are 3-0. Against the Mountaineers since. So we'll see. But the folks out in the desert, the really smart people out there in the desert, have West Virginia as the favorite Saturday.
So how about all that?
Something's got to give. That's going to be a good one, man. Really good.
Nice job, folks, in Bristol, handling behind enemy lines for us this week. Gus Malzahn looks good.
Like I said, I mean, if somebody says, hey, listen, we are going to remove you from your job. I know you're upset. I get it. You love it
Disappointed.
Here.
Disappointed.
I know you're bummed out. Terrible for your family. But how about we just...
How about you get your accountant
on the
phone? How
about we just give you $21 million and call it even? Of course you'd look good. You'd look tan, rested, probably drop a few pounds.
Got a Bay Hill shirt on.
Whatever. You have a couple of country club memberships.
Oh, yeah.
A couple pickup trucks.
Would you be coaching?
No. If somebody walked in my house today... and said, hey, listen, we know you really like working for ESPN and SiriusXM, but, Pac, you know, here's the deal. We're going to give you $21 million if you never,
gone.
Do another radio show or
would
television
show. Would
we hear
from you again would
no,
be the question.
You would never see me again. I'd be off social media. That'd be the first thing I do. The second thing I do, I'd sell this house. And the third thing I'd do, I'd be in Italy. We're in the North Carolina mountains near a lake with land and hounds.
See, you can't tell people where you're going.
Well, you know what?
If you want to be away.
$21 million, I am out of here.
Would you let the girls know where you are?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's nice.
They'd know.
All right.
They'd get the code.
We are halfway home on a Thursday program. When we come back, this will be good. Ladies and gentlemen, all you need to know, D'Angelo Hall is next, talking about Virginia Tech, West Virginia. Call your friends. This will be good. One of the best to play for the Hokies is next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday morning. 844-SAY-ACCN, the number for the program. And Mr. Durham, we had Eddie Royal on the other day.
We did, yeah.
And
Eddie had some moments.
Eddie talked about making the road trip to Morgantown,
right.
A tough place to play.
That's
wear your
it.
Helmet at all times.
Yeah.
And he said there's a lot of trash talking going on. But he said there was one guy in particular that would be the ultimate trash talker.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to a game like this one.
That's
between
it.
Virginia Tech and West Virginia.
I think the Hokies might need this kind of leadership on Saturday at noon. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go live to Northern Virginia. Here he is, kids. Hey, look, during the break, I called all the Virginia Tech fans. Call your neighbors. Call your friends. Ladies and gentlemen, here is D'Angelo Hall. I just want I want to give this to you. It's been 6,193 days since the Black Diamond Trophy was in Morgantown. How does that make you feel this morning?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good feeling right there. That's a really good feeling. Oh man, I can remember playing West Virginia games, and Morgantown was not a very friendly place. I played in a lot of crazy atmospheres as far as stadiums go. And I mean, I put West Virginia up against any NFL stadium as far as atmosphere, because that place got rocking for those night games.
So Eddie, we kidded around with Eddie that, you better have the helmet on at all times, maybe even when you go to sleep the night before the game, if it's a road trip. Give me a couple for instances and keep it clean.
Well, I mean, I remember Coach Beamer just telling everybody, you know, in the locker room before the game, like, look, guys, before you even went out for warmups, like, keep your helmet on at all times. And I mean, I'm this little naive kid, and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, whatever. And literally, they throwing batteries, they throwing little rocks, anything and everything they could get their hands on. They were kind of launching down there. And I told people, I said, it's one of those stadiums that, you know, if you're the opposing team, you hate to go in there. But as a fan of just football, I'm just like, man, to play for those fans, man, it's got to be a crazy feeling. That's probably why West Virginia, you know, one of the games that's coming to mind for me. I mean, they got us pretty good, and we were, I think, the number five ranked team, I think, top five team. But we went up in there half stepping, and they put the boot to us pretty good.
All right, now, but let's be honest here. You were the premier game day guy. You wanted the environment, right? I mean, you asked for this now. I mean, come on, D-Hall. You live for these type games, right? I mean, I know Bud Foster lived for these type games.
Yeah, absolutely. Every great competitor wants to go in a hostile environment and impose his will, you know? I mean, and so, yes, I mean, I love going up in that stadium for the simple fact that I knew it was going to be just us on the sidelines versus everybody else. And so it gave us, you know, a lot of momentum. And me, like you said, you know, I always loved that role of underdog. I love talking a little bit of trash along the way. And so
a little bit.
Those West Virginia fans had signs. They were talking trash. I'm talking trash right back to them in the stands, you know, as best I could.
By the way, as far as this year's version of Virginia Tech football, you had to love what you have seen so far in the first 2 weeks, especially week one. A lot of pressure on this team. Here comes North Carolina, all the hype, top 10, all that good stuff. Man, Lane Stadium was rocking like yesteryear. Crowd was awesome. Defense got after that North Carolina offensive front. Man, that looked like Hokie football.
Yeah, I mean, it really did. I had got a text from Dre Bly, one of the North Carolina coaches who I've known since I was a little kid. And, you know, he had kind of started to proceed with trash talking. And I'm just praising him up. Man, y'all got a good football team. I'm just hoping we can compete. And then I looked at it, watching the course of the game. I ended up texting him after the game. And I was like, a humble spirit wins every time, young man. And so, that was a great feeling, though, to watch us go out there and just dominate. But that's what you want to see out of this Virginia Tech football program. So, you know, hopefully they can keep it going, keep competing. You know, I was thoroughly impressed, and, you know, I'm continuing to root for those guys.
All right, now let's cut right to the chase here on one thing. Allegedly, now I can't confirm this because I haven't seen it, but apparently every once in a while your man Bly gets in a stance at practice on wide receivers. Apparently.
Oh,
not saying it happens. I'm just saying he gets in a stance. Now, Where's my man D. Hall on getting in a stance in his life right now?
Yeah, you probably ain't going to be able to catch me getting in no stance right now. I got little nine-year-old twin boys, and they always trying to try me out there, and I'm out there running around covering them, and 10 minutes later, I'm over here like, man, my knees hurt, man. Why my knees hurt? Why my back hurt? Why my hamstrings hurt? So, yeah, them days of me getting in my stance and covering guys are long gone.
I didn't say cover. I just said he got in a stance. That's all I said.
Okay.
Now, D'Angelo, here's the other thing Mark and I found ourselves talking about this week. And actually, we started talking about it before the season started. And I think you and I, when I saw you in August in Atlanta, I think we touched on this briefly. Virginia Tech and West Virginia need to play. This is the kind of game that needs to happen annually. I mean, it just doesn't need to be every once in a while. Now, to Pac's credit, Pac said they stopped the series because it got too intense. Was that a good thing now to bring it back? And does it need to stay?
I think it does. It was one of those rivalries. I know we as Virginia Tech football players, we definitely look forward to that matchup. I just think of just old school Big East football, even watching West Virginia and Miami battle. And then we knew at some point we were going to end up battling with West Virginia and we were going to end up battling with Miami. And so it was just kind of that rivalry, and especially during the time I played. I mean, they had some really, really great players, really good athletes. Top five draft picks. I think even Pac-Man Jones, who came out the year right after me. They had speed. They had talent. Coach Rodriguez was up there at the time, and I mean, he was a heck of a football coach, and they were doing different things personnel-wise. So West Virginia was on the map when it came to football. And so, you know, us as Virginia Tech football players, we wanted that matchup. We wanted, you know, that primetime opportunity to go out there and really represent our state, because that's what it came down to. It was West Virginia versus Virginia. And so we already felt like we owned the state over UVA. So for us, it was about, you know, obviously going out there and trying to dominate West Virginia as well.
By the way, the only stance that matters now, D'Angelo, is making sure you got a good spot on the couch on game day. That's the only stance that really matters at this point in time. You've earned that. By the way, speaking of UVA, and I asked Wes Durham this question earlier. When you guys get done playing West Virginia, you know, prime time Saturday night, Virginia takes on North Carolina. Hokies have already beaten the Heels. You'll see the Hoos later on in the Commonwealth Cup and all that good stuff. A Virginia Tech fan roots for whom Saturday night? Ooh. North Carolina or Virginia?
I think you root for North Carolina because you know you already beat that football team. And then just the hatred or the disdain for UVA runs too thick. So anytime they play whoever, I'm not taking UVA regardless. But I think, you know, if UNC wins that football game, you can kind of, you know, start putting that little measuring stick out, right? Well, how did UNC do this? All right, we did that against UNC. And so you start kind of comparing your win versus UNC versus how they stack up against UVA. So, you know, I'm hoping UNC can pull it out.
Hey, I know you played with Justin, right, who now runs the Virginia Tech defense. How much of the Bud Foster influence do you see in what he's doing? How much of that knowledge, how much of that experience has carried over in your mind?
I mean, you see a good bit of it. I can remember even asking Coach Foster when Justin got the job, you know, has Justin reached out to you? And Bud said, absolutely. You know, he's been in my office. We've been kind of game planning, trying to figure out how different things work. And so, you know, to have a tool like Coach Foster still in the building over there, I know for Justin is a heck of a deal. And so, this defense is looking great. This offense is bringing new things to the table. And I'm just excited. I'm excited to see if they can continue to keep it up. You know, it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
D'Angelo, how often do you get a chance to go back and watch a game at Lane?
Well, you know, now that I'm working on Sundays calling games for Washington, it really just depends, you know, probably once a year. And that's because of the bye week. You know, after that, I'm with my kids, kind of youth football on Saturdays, and so it's always trying to figure out where's that window, or trying to get into one of those preseason games, you know, pretty early on in the season where they play at kind of a neutral site. So, you know, I haven't been able to watch them play probably in the last couple of years with, you know, with the pandemic and everything.
All right, so how is D'Angelo Hall? I know Hokie fans want to hear this. What's D'Angelo Hall like at youth football on Saturday morning? That's got to be a moment.
Hey, you know I'm turned up out there. I got to be. So I'm out there just coaching up hard, fast, strong, hoping everybody just, you know, trying to play the game the right way, trying to get these kids to continue to have fun. You know, my kids probably don't like it too much because I'm always on them about maximum effort. But, I mean, you know, we have a blast. We're hoping to play down there in Florida for the Nationals this year. So we got a really good football team.
All right, you told me in August now, one of yours is ready to go, huh? You think got a chance?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my linebacker, man. My linebacker, one of my twins' name's Trey. And yeah, he's about it. He loves contact. He comes downhill. He plays football the right way, so. And he's pretty smart too. He's starting to pick it up mentally, so.
Yeah.
I'm sensing a little DNA action right there,
too.
Right?
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Football, it's a tough game, man.
Even at 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, even at 9. Yeah. Let's get it narrowed down to the 5 officials, can we?
That's it.
Hey, because remember this too, D Hall. Here's the other thing. They got that NIL thing out there now. You didn't get that NIL money. That NIL bread wasn't available for you.
Nah, not at all. I know. That's a game changer, right?
It could be.
It could be. Hey, great to see you. Thanks for doing the show. Always great to catch up and see you in Atlanta in a couple weeks. Be well, my man.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. I appreciate you guys having me.
You bet. Anytime. D'Angelo Hall, one of our favorites. Second time we've had him on.
He was a player boy.
Oh
my goodness.
Everywhere.
He would hit you and then remind you that he hit you.
Oh.
Right? I mean, that mindset is exactly what you need on your football team.
Next time, and I should have done this, but it didn't have anything to do with what we're going to. Next time, I'm going to have him tell you the Randy Moss story his rookie year. Preseason game. His rookie year, Randy Moss. Just remind me next time we have him.
Making up. Hey, mark the tape.
Mark the tape.
Mark the tape.
Because next time D'Angelo's on, I'm going to get him to talk about Randy Moss when Randy Moss went like that.
Speaking of West Virginia guys.
Yeah, no doubt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So great fun with D'Angelo Hall. When we come back, Mandy Alonzo had a comment or two this week about North Carolina and their physicality.
Yeah, he talked about wanting to be on ACC Network, and he's getting plenty of airtime this week. He really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of tape that might be shown in football buildings, he questioned Carolina's toughness and their physicality. We go back and kind of look at some of the numbers of Virginia's clashes with Carolina. We'll do that next on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. Thursday edition. May thanks to D'Angelo Hall that just joined us. Power Hour will be busy. Tim Hasselbeck with his weekly visit in the Bear. Chris Felica will join us as well. 844-SAY-ACC.
You're going to get Bear. You're going to get Bear on Miami, aren't you?
Definitely. I mean, he's a Miami guy.
We got to get Miami sorted out with Bear.
So we got to get the answer there. He'll know.
We'll do that. All right, so Mandy Alonzo made the papers this week.
Sure did. Yeah. In our show, multiple times.
Yeah, talking about the physicality of Carolina, the want to, the culture, all these pillar points, if you will, about the Tar Heels and Wahoos coming up on Saturday night here on ACC Network. So, when you got the staff to do it, you do things like this. We went back and measured kind of the last 4 years. What's happened in those games? And does it speak to a lack of physicality?
Keep in mind, Virginia's won all four.
That's it.
But they've won six in the last eight in the last four against North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. So, let's go back to 2017. Cavaliers win 20-14 in Chapel Hill. Jordan Ellis had 136 yards of rushing. Virginia had 156 total. They also got to Carolina in terms of a sack. Key play on a fourth down, 1:07 to go to seal the game was a sack. compared to their season averages, Virginia had run for 156 in the game against Carolina. They averaged only 93.5 on the ground that season. Carolina was 3 of 11 on third down and allowed UVA to convert all three of their fourth down conversions. That defense, by the way, converted just 39% of their converted just 39% of their fourth down attempts during the year. They hit all three that day, and they held Carolina. Virginia was got more rushing yards than they had on the year. 93.5, they had 156 against Tar Heels.
And the video we showed right there shows the officials missing a face mask penalty on that sack. Just saying. I mean, I'm just calling it out. I'm sitting there watching it. I don't remember the game off the top of my head, but I'm sitting there watching the video, and Larry Fedora is going ballistic on the sideline. He's right. It was a face mask. Yeah. They missed that one. So it had nothing to do with line play. But
or just, physicality or running the ball. But
just
there
saying,
you go.
It should have been a flag.
All right. 2018's our next stop in these last four. Virginia wins 31-21. Carolina gained just 66 yards on the ground while allowing 208. 112 came from Bryce Perkins. Tar Heels were 4 of 14 on third down. UVA was 6 of 13. This UNC team averaged 193 on the ground for the season. They had only 66 in Charlottesville.
North Carolina just can't beat them in Charlottesville. I mean, it's uncanny.
Count the number of wins on one hand since 1980.
It's goofy, right? I mean, and I'm not talking about that. There's times even when Virginia's down, man, they see North Carolina come to Charlottesville, it's a W. They just happen to own them in Charlottesville. It's kind of one of those weird, sometimes there's certain teams that just seem to have your number. That's the deal in Charlottesville. But normally, when it's in Chapel Hill, the Heels take care of business. But there is a trend with these four games, though.
Yeah. 2019, Virginia on the way to the Coastal, right?
Yep.
38-31, the final. Another Saturday night game in Chapel Hill.
Great game.
112 on the ground from Bryce Perkins, 65-yard touchdown scramble. Throws Hassis Dubois for a touchdown there. It was one of four consecutive scoring drives for the Hoos, in which spanned the late second and early third quarters. UVA also stopped the Heels on a late fourth down and goal from the 6-yard line to preserve the win. Bryce Perkins had a lot to do with the 18 and 19 games.
There's no question about it. So dynamic. He could throw, he could run, he was a problem, hard to tackle, great leadership. I mean, he's exactly what you wanted at quarterback.
Yep. 2020 is I don't want to call it an outlier from the previous three, but in a way it is. Virginia won 44-41. You see they were 4 of 4 on fourth down. They held Carolina to 93 rushing yards. Now, remember, this is a Carolina team that was putting up 236 yards per game. Ball got dropped there.
But the point is, there is a definite line in the sand with every one of these games.
They slow down the run game.
They do indeed. And that starts up front.
Yep.
And that's kind of what, the word coming out of Charlottesville this weekend was, guess what? They might come out slinging it. And swinging, and guess what? Don't think they can go 60 minutes.
All right.
Culture versus culture.
So you mentioned the rush yards. No question about that. Carolina going into the ball game is under 37% on third down. UNC is allowing 36.7% of third downs to be converted. That's ninth in the ACC. Allowing 3.5 yards per rush. That's eighth in the league. So we'll see where this goes. I think it comes down, as you said, to whether Carolina can run the ball. The curious part is that's a question whether they're playing Virginia or anybody else right now, isn't it?
Yeah, they couldn't do it. I mean, really, that's been – I call Louisville the team of mystery. But really, one of the surprises, as I said earlier today, has been North Carolina's starting five up front, back, all great experience. Before the season started, you looked at North Carolina, said, well, one of the positives about this team is, we know about Sam Howell, but, man, that offensive line might be the best in the league, certainly on the short list. And you'd have to say after 2 weeks, they have underperformed, Wes. Now, granted, you got to stay healthy. I get all that stuff. But that, to me, is the critical piece of the equation Saturday night when they take on Virginia.
Carolina.
Those guys up front got to take care of business.
Carolina has 134 plays on offense in two ball games. Okay? Now, you and I can figure that out to be, you know, roughly 65 and change. Okay? If I told you that Carolina had more run plays than pass plays, would you be surprised?
Yeah.
They do. They've run the ball 70 times for an average of 5 a carry. They've thrown the ball 64 times.
But I would also tell you, I don't learn a whole lot about beating up on Georgia State. I do learn a lot when you play a team like Virginia Tech that challenged them up front and dominated them. That told me everything. It's kind of like the Clemson stats, right? Hey, you take on Georgia who has elite defensive skill.
Sure.
You know, you can run all over South Carolina State. That's why this week will be kind of an interesting test to see what they do running the football against the Jackets. But come back to North Carolina. When it was time to play against the Hokies, they lost that battle up front.
Okay, but don't you think that in some ways we keep talking about Carolina's inequities running the ball here? And I'm just going to present another angle. If the Tar Heels are improved on defense and they're allowing teams only 3.5 yards rushing, if they've improved defensively, can the defense do enough to slow down Brennan Armstrong, whatever the throw game's going to be, Jelani Woods, the tight end who's going crazy last week against Illinois?
They're going to have to. It's not a matter of if. They're going to have to do that. Otherwise, if this becomes a shootout, Sam Howell's going to have to throw for 5 Bills. And now you say, okay, is everybody ready to step up, start making plays? I mean, that becomes a $1 million question.
Yeah.
It's not Georgia State this week. It's Virginia.
No. Nor is it the College of William & Mary for the Cavaliers.
It's not roast beef A&M this week, boys. No.
All right, Power Hour's next on a Thursday, and Tim Hasselbeck gets us started. Timing is everything on this. I love it. We talk about the Cavaliers and the Tar Heels Saturday night at Keenan. We'll do it next with Tim. And what's it mean for Boston College with Dennis Grossell now? We'll touch on that as well. Back after this on ACCN.
Packer and Durham.